The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
The first half of the year coming to a close and a bombshell in college football with the reports across the board that USC and UCLA are heading to the Big Ten. And is it over yet? Pete Thamel joining us. Pete, thanks so much for the time. A crazy week. Just some perspective on what has gone on, how it has happened, and what happens next. Good afternoon.
Afternoon, Paul. A transformative day in the history of college athletics, similar to the day a year ago when Oklahoma and Texas left for the SEC. There are countless parallels between those two moves, and it ultimately comes down to something I've said on your show in the past and have written a lot on ESPN, and really believe that we're not looking at a breakaway in college athletics, Paul. We're looking at a pull up, and these two leagues are now officially racing each other to be ahead in college athletics, and the other three so-called Power Five leagues are eons behind. The best properties not named Notre Dame have been taken off the board, essentially, by the Big Ten and the SEC within a calendar year. We are in a time of seismic and transformative change, and it's only going to continue. Leagues, other schools are going to be scurrying to join the other side. Today is the day the moat was cut, Paul, and the sides are as distinct as ever. The SEC and the Big Ten are ahead, and everyone else not named Notre Dame is behind.
So let's start there, Pete. The conversation is endless about Notre Dame. Does this affect them at all?
Well, I mean, everything's interwoven, Paul. So I think one of the many tributaries that comes out of this is how the playoff is impacted. I think if you're the ACC and you're the Pac-12, and you sat around with a straight face, and I know they semantic gymnastics and said they weren't against it, but they were obstacles to the playoff. And now there's going to be significant obstacles for them to be included in the playoff in a significant way, or it's certainly going to be a lot harder. Like, is this next iteration of the playoff, does it go towards an all-SEC, all-Big Ten and people meeting? I just think we're going to see more moves sooner than later. The financial forces and the financial pressures are too hard. So to go back and actually answer your question, Paul, and I apologize I didn't, but the pretext was that Notre Dame is going to follow playoff access. And I think that's one of the reasons why Jack Swarbrick was one of the linchpins of the administrators who put together the 12-team playoff. And he was as disappointed as Greg Sankey was and others that it didn't end up happening. The reasons for it not happening, I mean, honestly, like when you look back and say, oh, the environment's too hectic, we need to get things fixed, we need to calm them down. Well, it was a brush fire then, and it's a raging inferno now. And it's naive to think that we're ever going to really have NIL in some contained space, and there's going to be some legitimate type of NCAA enforcement. So market forces are driving the world, and it's driving away from the smaller revenue leagues right now.
Pete Thamel with us. Pete, we talked 48 weeks ago when that bombshell went off, and we thought there would be action, but there really wasn't too much. I mean, the Big 12 made some moves, but they had to. And I know we're guessing, but we're really not guessing, not with the kind of sources that you have. And I hate to ask a skilled reporter just to give us blatant speculation, but cobbling together what you're hearing or have heard in the next 2 hours, where should we pay the most attention? Should it be east, west, which leagues and which schools?
Well, Paul, I think you have to follow the money. This was an easy one to predict in a lot of ways. USC and UCLA are going to pay no financial penalty to leave the Pac-12. They're going to fulfill their contract, and they're going to fulfill their grant of rights. Usually when I type the word grant of rights, it means something's happening in college sports. For those not fluent in realignment, essentially when you sign a grant of rights, which are usually congruent to TV contracts, you essentially sign away the rights to all of your games through that period of time. So one of the hints in the Pac-12 that this was going to happen was that the grant of rights were expiring and there had been no movement by USC or UCLA to sign on to a longer grant of rights. It would be easy to point to the ACC. The issue there is that they have grant of rights through the length of their TV deal, which I believe is through 2036. If it's not 36, it's 34. But it's well into the 2030s. And, you know, I've said many times publicly, it is cement shoes on the league. It is a terrible deal from the ACC perspective. It would essentially have Clemson making half as much money as South Carolina in the near future, within the end of the decade, in terms of TV revenue. So I think we see one of two things, Paul. I think we see some sort of breakaway, which could cost upwards of $100 million for the blue bloods of that league to go find greener pastures because of exit fees and because of grant of rights, or the ACC scrambles and gets creative and does some sort of unequal revenue sharing where if you win X games or and such, it basically makes sure that Syracuse doesn't make the same amount as Clemson, even though Clemson's obviously carrying the weight in football. So but again, you've been around as long as I have, Paul. Unequal revenue sharing means unequal leagues, and that's how the Big 12 fell apart 20 years ago. So is that solution a Band-Aid? But I think today is a very bad day in the ACC offices, and I think there's a huge black cloud of concern now that's going to hover over that league.
Yeah, and Clemson clearly is the attraction. I know what you would have said 5 or 6 years ago. It'd been obvious who was next, but it's a little bit unclear now. After Clemson, which other program right now is the most antsy, trying to say get me out of here at any cost?
So I think the most compelling program, and perhaps when you go to the spreadsheets and pay a lot of money consultants, they tell you the most valuable is North Carolina. It has an unbelievable brand. It stretches across a wide swath of a highly populated state. Their football clearly hasn't been as successful as Clemson. There's no question. And basketball is only really, even in a league like the ACC, a 15% proposition. But I think it's the seventh or eighth most populous state in America, Paul. And there's a lot of good football players in the state of North Carolina. And just as a school brand, I think it's the best in the entire ACC. And it's the school you could see go north or south, which I think is going to be valuable too. So I think if you're North Carolina, it's a fascinating institutional discussion you have to have, Paul. You say, do we leave our basketball roots? Do we leave our rivalry with Duke? Can you imagine realignment getting to the point where it shakes the Carolina-Duke rivalry from a twice-a-year interleague-ish, a meeting? I mean, that's where we are right now, and those conversations are happening. And I think if you're North Carolina, you have to do that. And I'm sure you'd have to give some smelling salts to some blue bloods down on Tobacco Road when you bring up that notion. But the world is changing. Markets are driving the forces, and the pathway out is pretty linear. From there, Paul, obviously, Miami has a great national brand. They haven't had the results, but they still do resonate. Florida State obviously had a generation of success under Bobby Bowden and not a whole lot of success after Jimbo Fisher left there. So it is really, really a compelling moment in time in college athletics right now. But, you know, it's just like our old friends Woodward and Bernstein said, we're following the money.
Just a mere 50 years ago. Pete, out west, we mentioned North Carolina and obviously Clemson, the Pac-12 commissioner, I guess George Kliavkoff is finished with his victory tour, celebrating his first year on the job. Which schools does he have to? I mean, other than just everything, which schools are most likely to bolt from that league?
Yeah, you think Brett Yormark's enjoying his first day as Big 12 commissioner? Just another quiet day in college athletics. I really think if you're the Pac-12 right now, the move is brutal in so many ways. You not only lose your two best teams, you lose them on the cusp of your new television deal, and you lose them to one of your longtime TV partners who are going to buy the rights to the most valuable games in your time zone. So it'll be interesting to see how much more value USC and UCLA bring to the Big Ten deal. Because it's going to be, I would think the Pac-12 deal, and this is just a guess from covering these things over the years, is at least going to cut 40% into what the Pac-12 can now get. And it's probably going to be more, Paul. And here's the thing. If you are Fox, which obviously has been widely reported as headed to get the Big Ten deal, what's your incentive to invest big in the Pac-12 right now? I mean, there's very little incentive to do that. And, you know, I think the next two best brands in that league, athletic-wise, obviously, are Oregon and Washington. Washington has a better market. Oregon has more recent success. Are they in a hurry to go somewhere? Does the Pac-12 deal have to be unfairly weighted to them to keep them happy? Stanford is probably the best brand in the Bay Area. They've been in a slump in football. They are still in a really, really attractive market, although they may not resonate as much. But no, today, there's no way to sugarcoat it or overstate it. Today is a terrible day in the history of the Pac-12, which is now, again, the Pac-10.
So finally, if you are Brett, you are Mark, you're probably hoping that your PR guy didn't book you for too many interviews this afternoon. What do you do? I mean, you've been Bob Bowlesby has handed you four schools, all attractive in their own way, but compared to what we saw last year and what we're seeing today, pretty pale. So what do you do, or what can you do?
It's a good question, and I think you go on the offensive if you're Brett Yormark. I think you try to go get a swath of Colorado and maybe the Arizona schools, and you try to build up for your own deal that could be coming. You need to position your league. I feel like the four schools that the Big 12 added 10 years from now could be the best four schools in that league. I mean, Baylor's had a great recent run, and Oklahoma State obviously has been a very consistent top 25 program under Mike Gundy. But when you look at the markets and you look at the talent that's available, certainly Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF are well positioned for success. I don't think today's a dire day for Brett Yormark by any means, but I think they very quickly have to start having macro discussions so they don't get left behind. Because what you need to do is when playoff discussions begin again, I think there's going to be an increased desperation from the Big 12 and the Pac-12 especially.
Okay, we have been talking to Pete Thamel. I think we lost him. We'll double check because I had about 10 more questions, but is he gone? We think so. He said a lot there. We're doing satellite hookups, and sometimes they go brilliantly and sometimes they don't. That one was going long, which may be one reason it ran out. But I thought Pete had a lot of interesting things to say, especially about the ACC. It's not as dire in the ACC as it is in the Pac-12 because they didn't just lose their biggest attraction and their biggest market, and quite frankly, their biggest market, on steroids being Los Angeles. But I thought it was interesting what he said about the ACC, that North Carolina might be the most attractive brand in the league. We think about Duke, but Duke doesn't. I mean, Duke has a national basketball following, but this is not about basketball. This is all about football. And, you always think of Duke and North Carolina together. Years ago, there was a lot of conversation about dipping into the Carolinas for the SEC, and clearly it never happened. But I would say of all the schools in the ACC, the one that they are literally pulling their hair out is at Clemson right now, because that is a program that has played for the national championship countless times. They have won two national championships against the SEC, and they look very small today, being in the ACC. Sugarcoat is a word we like to throw out there when we don't really want to hurt somebody's feelings, but you just can't get around it. We're going to bring Pete back. He's got too much information to let it end there. So again, the top of the hour, the news is simply unbelievable in college football. USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten. That's Kevin Warren's move to check Greg Sankey grabbing Oklahoma and Texas. And we're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
And welcome back. We're chatting with Pete Thamel of ESPN about the events of this day, and they are just literally unbelievable when you think about it. Pete, it's pretty amazing that we are now 21 minutes into a conversation, and I don't believe the name Greg Sankey or the SEC has been mentioned, which is interesting. Just shows you the magnitude of what Kevin Warren has pulled off. A couple of things about that first. You got Oklahoma and Texas slated for 25. I don't know what changes there. The heat tank he took last year related to the CFP seems a lot less significant. So, and I know you alluded to the big brands in the ACC, but what happens to the SEC now? If you're sitting there, you're trying to digest two more schools, but you see everything going on around you, and you don't want to sit around while the Big Ten is becoming a 20 or 24 school league.
Yeah, it's like a giant game of risk, Paul. You have to really look at the landscape and ask your consultants who still adds value. And I would think in terms of real transformative television value, there's probably less than 8 schools left on the board. Now, there's some longer plays, and so there's some different ways to view it, but there really aren't a lot of other places to go. And you have to ask yourself, what do we want to become? I think, Greg Sankey was clearly ahead of the curve in what the SEC did last summer. And this is the catch-up move, and I think a very good one, by the Big Ten. So now, I believe both leagues are at 16 schools. Is that right, Paul?
Yes. Or will be.
14 and 14, they just added 2. Yeah. Yes, correct. Exactly. So when you add the other 2, so you have to say to yourselves, are we going to have 220-team leagues? I don't think either stops here. Is it next week? Is it next month? Is it 5 years? That's uncertain. But the only constant in realignment is in college sports is change. So I do think there'll be a desperation on the other side of the moat to get over there and to grow and to associate with those brands. And so what the SEC does next is a really interesting question, because I think monetarily the Big Ten may be jumping ahead here by a decent amount. The Big Ten had always been, ahead or close to ahead of the SEC, depending on the years you were. And part of that was because Jim Delaney was so innovative with the Big Ten network that it just gave such a financial lead to those leagues. But the addition of these two schools took what was a lucrative TV contract, which is obviously going to be headed by Fox and run by Fox, and really juiced it up in a significant fashion. When you look at the Big Ten, the bell cows are obviously Ohio State and Michigan, and I would think you have to rank USC now amongst those big three. And then UCLA would be right there in that next tier with Penn State's probably in that top tier conversation or right on the cusp. And then UCLA is on that next level. Those are just two crucial additions in the Los Angeles market, blows away Austin, which is a great market, and obviously blows away the Oklahoma City market. So it's fascinating times, and it's high end chess with TV consultants, putting out spreadsheets that are dictating the future of the sport we all love.
And speaking of TV, we've always heard that the Rose Bowl, which is obviously the Big Ten and the Pac-12, have stopped a lot of progress, especially with the CFP. What happens now to the granddaddy of them all, which until now has been sacrosanct?
Yeah, their own tenant left. Right, UCLA plays their home games at the Rose Bowl. So, I mean, it's when you wrap your mind around the Rose Bowl reverberations, it's pretty remarkable. I think talking to some officials out west today, there was like, do we not play the Rose Bowl? But the Rose Bowl is such a valuable property; they'd be biting off their nose to spite their face, as my mom would say, to not play it. But can you imagine Oregon playing USC in the Rose Bowl? in 2027? I mean, it's a pretty remarkable turn, and there's got to be a lot of uncomfortable conversations. Look, USC and UCLA were part of the conversation that wanted to protect the Rose Bowl. The Pac-12 commissioner is going to do what the leaders at USC and UCLA are going to say, and that reverberated through playoff talks for decades. And now you went through all these gymnastics to keep the Rose Bowl involved and to keep the parade and the sunset, and in the two grand protectors of the Rose Bowl go run to the other side. So I mean, it's probably to me the most fascinating subset issue in all this is what does happen to the Rose Bowl? How does the Rose Bowl happen in the future? Does the Pac-12 say buzz off and bring in the Big 12 champion? Can they do that? I mean, the Rose Bowl has always had a robust and long contract. It's one of the most valuable properties in college athletics. I think back, Paul, to, you know, when the Big East started to fall apart, one of the things that really kept things rolling there from a basketball standpoint was the Big East tournament. And it's sort of the East Coast version of the Rose Bowl, right? Everybody watches every March. It's in the middle of a major American city in an institution of a venue. And it'll be interesting to see how the Rose Bowl, or if the Rose Bowl, is reshaped in any way going forward.
Pete, one more, and I really do appreciate you sticking around. The July 4th holiday is here. People are everywhere and scrambling throughout the country trying to figure out what to do here. For those of us who watch this on a minute-to-minute basis, what should we be focusing on now, other than the official announcement? What are the key signs to keep our eyes on?
That's a good question, Paul. And I don't think, other than when this goes formally, there's going to be there's going to be any news imminently. I think the Pac-12 officials are all going to gather tonight on a call, I was told. And, you know, how they respond and what they do next will be key. You made a snarky little quintessential Feinbaum joke about George Kliavkoff's victory lap after his first year. Well, this is the first day on the job for George, right? I mean, his first year really was pretty event-free. And I you wonder if there's any institutional regret there expressed about the playoff, because if you're the Pac-12 right now, you have to say, okay, how do we recalibrate ourselves to make sure our TV contract, which is really coming in 2 years, which means you're negotiating it like tomorrow, is still viable? And then how do we stay a vibrant part of the football landscape and in the college football playoff conversation? To me right now, there had been, going into this morning, there had been a Power 2, a gap, and then it was the ACC and the Pac-12, and then there was a gap to the Big 12. Right now, the Big 12 and the Pac-12, I think, are neck and neck in a lot of ways behind. And what incentive do the power brokers in the Big 10 and the SEC have to include them in playoff talks in the future?
Yeah, especially the way they treated that group last year. Pete, day is it's 4:30 Eastern time. This day is a long way from being over. We deeply appreciate you hopping on here for an extended time. We will talk to you very, very soon. Thank you, Pete.
Thanks, Paul.
Great stuff. And again, this day just continues to amaze. We're going to talk to somebody next. We had scheduled, and we are rearranging everything, but the fact that she has a law degree from the Pac-12, once worked in that office, I think we want to talk to our next guest, the commissioner of the West Coast Conference. She joins us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hey, welcome back. Really excited to welcome Gloria Navarez to the program. She's the commissioner of the West Coast Conference. And we do want to talk about one of the main reasons we wanted to say hello to her, because of the diversity movement, not only around the country, but especially in her league. But we do want to start with another story that is making the rounds. Commissioner, you're certainly well-versed in the Pac-12, having been a senior associate commissioner. You have a law degree from the Pac-12. Good afternoon. You've also worked at Oklahoma. Before we get too deep here, just your reaction to the craziness of today and pretty much every day in college football. Good afternoon.
Yes, thank you, Paul, for having me on today. And it certainly is a crazy afternoon with the move of USC and UCLA to the Big Ten. Many of us are wondering if that's going to trip another realignment, and rumors are already flying. So what I think my first reaction, though, is I just wish we can figure out a way to unbundle football from the rest of the sports. I mean, certainly a lot of these moves are motivated by and fueled by the media contracts around college football. But, you know, I just wonder how much it makes sense for all the other sports.
You're right, and you've heard this, of course, but even when you're talking about traditional leagues that excel and have always excelled in basketball, like the ACC, we just heard the commissioner not that long ago talk about, well, we have to focus on football, and there you have arguably the two greatest names in basketball history, 8 miles from each other. As someone that has been in these leagues, including the Pac-12, is there any hope? I ask you that because I don't think there is, but I'm curious for somebody who's a commissioner, let alone just a talk show host, to stop this train from going down the track.
Yeah, and you know, I'm also serving on the NCAA Transformation Committee, and these are the conversations we're having in the room about how different BCS football is from the rest of the ecosystem that is college sports. I mean, one can argue one of the strongest properties we have going in the college space is the men's basketball Field of 68 tournament. And so, you know, on the one hand, I love everything about BCS football. On the other, I just would hope to find a way to perhaps, and I use the word unbundle because I think this is really motivated by the media dollars behind college football. And, you know, one could say that the rest of the sports and champs are working pretty well.
Well, I wouldn't know anything about that, sitting here in a building where that says ESPN outside. Commissioner, I do want to ask you, though, because you were at the Pac-12 for a while when a lot of the important moments were occurring, and I realize these are always awkward because things like this happen. You have friends there, no doubt. There's a lot of business relationships. But when you're in that position like they are today, they either have to scramble or almost be undone. And I just I don't know what else they can do right now other than play either go on the offense or try to play defense. What happens when, I mean, I realize you're not there now. You have your own league to worry about. But, you know, what can you do when you're a commissioner who has been there 1 year and you expected this morning? You had no inkling of this when you woke up this morning.
Well, that's become a day in the life of any commissioner, right? Regardless of where you sit. Every day is a new adventure. I do think, you know, the schools in the Pac-12, Pac-10 now maybe, are very, very strong Western region brands and very established Their original membership was formed around geography, but as they grew, it's been anchored in, you know, high level of education and like mission and values. So I do think, well, I wouldn't even, not in the room, wouldn't guess what their conversations are like, would anticipate that they are going to come together and try to rally around schools that are like the Pac-12 in both mission, values, and academic achievement.
We did want to talk to you because you're on this transformation committee, which is trying to reorganize college athletics. Good luck right now with what's going on during this conversation, but especially something that your league implemented, honoring the great the Bill Russell, called the Russell Rule. And we see variations of this in various industries, especially the best known, of course, being the Rooney Rule in the NFL. But can you explain this, how it came about, and what you hope to accomplish by the implementation of this?
So the Russell Rule is a hiring commitment. And for every full-time position in your higher levels of athletic administration, full-time coaches in WCC-sponsored sport, you must interview a person who represents a historically underrepresented background. And it's intentionally broad because in the college space, you know, we don't have very many women at all coaching men's sports. We do have men coaching women's sports in great numbers. So we were intentionally broad in trying to craft this in order to also talk about gender as well as ethnic diversity. So we just finished our first year of data collection, 1 year under the Russell Rule, and we were extremely excited about the results. Out of 84 leagues, 84 hires across the league, 81 of them met the rule. And although the policy doesn't require anything about who you hire, it's just about getting someone in the final pool, we had a 51% hire through rate. In other words, 51% of the time that candidate of the unrepresented background actually was offered and took the job.
That is a, do you suspect or do you know in meeting with so many other commissioners and athletic directors across the country at various meetings, whether anyone else or are people going to follow suit?
We have gotten many, many inquiries. The NCAA has held this policy out as a best practice. I don't know that anyone's walked up to actually adopting it in their bylaws yet, but I certainly have had numerous inquiries from all my colleagues.
Well, Commissioner, I would love to come back, have you come back sometime, and we could talk only about that and other things, as you well are well aware what the events of the day. But we deeply appreciate your time and admire and certainly applaud what you have done and what you are trying to do out there. Be well. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. The Commissioner of the West Coast Conference, Gloria Navarez.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome back. Reese Davis, top of the next hour on the seismic shift today in college football. How many times are we going to say that? Let's continue with more of your phone calls. And Tim is in Dallas. So hello, Tim.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
We're doing great.
This is my first time calling.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Paul, I've been listening for a few hours, and I've heard everything that your guests have said. And they made some good points about this about the shocking news. I have one point just about what your last guest, the one before the commissioner of the WCC said, the one before that. He mentioned about the TV markets. And while Los Angeles is big, I'm not sure how many people there actually follow college football, but there's a lot, I guess. But what he mentioned Austin, which is probably 1.5 million people, in Oklahoma City, which is the metropolitan area, is a little over a million people. But what he forgets is that if the SEC hasn't already locked it in as a TV market, halfway between Norman, Oklahoma City, and Austin is one of the top 10 metropolitan areas in the country in DFW. And if the SEC hadn't locked it in when Oklahoma and Texas show up, it will be an SEC city for sure. And the next thing I wanted to say was, with NIL, I guess I shouldn't feel sorry for the student-athletes anymore, but I still kind of do, because when I heard this, I was thinking the logistics of this change. If you set football aside, football means that Southern Cal and UCLA, four times every fall, they're going to get on their plane and fly two time zones and an average of 2,000 miles to get to the middle of Big Ten country. The shortest flight being 1,600, the longest being 2,800. But forget about football for a second. What about the other sports?
Yeah,
the basketballs, the volleyballs, all of those. Those teams travel at home. They go at home one day a week, and then they're on the road.
Tim, if I could jump in here, what you have to do, and you're right, you also have track, you have softball. I mean, that trip from Rutgers to Los Angeles is a bear. I've been on it a couple of times, and I mean, again, I'm not 17 years old, but you don't stand off that, you don't walk off that plane and want to go dancing. I mean, you're in a daze, and they're going to have to figure out a way to knock in basketball, to play two games together. You just can't. You can't go back and forth. I'm sure. I think they'll figure that. But football itself, though, I mean, football is a sport where you play in Rutgers on a Saturday night. You're not getting back to L.A. until 6 in the morning. And if you have a Thursday night game or a Friday night game, I mean, you are in big, big trouble. Hey, thank you so much. Great to hear from you, Tim. It's a pleasure. How about Pat in Florida? Hey, Pat.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thank you very much for having me. Second time caller.
Thank
great
you
show
very
as
much.
Always.
You bet.
Just want to chat a little bit. A couple days ago, there was a caller, a little discussion on Lincoln Riley. And if I recall, the comment you'd made is USC doesn't need a good coach. They need a great coach. And they now have that in Lincoln Riley, more or less. And I guess I'd just like to ask, defining a great coach, and just offer my opinion. First of all, with Lincoln Riley, I think he's largely been a product of really good timing and circumstances at Oklahoma. He inherited a very good program from Stoops. Obviously, it's a top 10, 12 national program with the history, the tradition, the game day, the resources, et cetera, et cetera. Second, he had the advantage of being in the program when UT probably had the most dismal 4 or 5 years in the program's history, obviously from a recruiting standpoint and elsewhere. Third, in my view, the head coach is responsible for the entire product of the team, all three units, the offense, the defense, and the special teams. And you just can't cherry pick success in one unit, i.e. the offense. And that's why you get paid $8 to $10 million a year. And if you look at Lincoln Riley and you really look at what I would define as a criteria for a great coach, you've got to, have sustained success over multiple years, I think at least 4 or 5 years minimum. Your teams have to show up in big games. They don't necessarily have to win all the big games, but they at least have to show up. And then you have to run a reputable program. And clearly Lincoln Riley, in my opinion, has done that. And I think he's a good guy. But if you look at Lincoln Riley in the playoffs, he's not only is he 0-4, but his teams have given up an average of 50 points a game. They have been embarrassed, if not humiliated, in at least two of those games, Bama and LSU. They got beat lopsided against Clemson, and they had one competitive game against Georgia. But those are games where he's got 3 to 4 weeks of preparation time, and if he needs to spend all of his time on the defense, if that's the area of weakness.
Pat, I hate to run, but we're out of time.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.